All right, folks. I am recording and we are on our final training call for round 18. Curious, is there anybody here who was here at the very first round of SBSM? Don't even ask me what year that was. I think it was like 2015. Maybe before it was called SPSM. But there might be some of you here a bit more recently since it was SPSM. So we're getting going with our final trading call here, number nine. And the concept today is really about application integration theory and practice. We'll get into that shortly. And I just wanted to say hello in the chat here. We've got folks asked. I started the recording by asking how long have people been with us? Some people have been with us since the very beginning, the third round of SBSM, the fourth, late 2018, third round, second round, first, third. Yeah, so we're going into the 19th round next year in 2026. And all of you as alumni will be invited to join that again. So keep an eye on your emails because that is the way we communicate with you. And for those who have just begun this time, it's really simple. We send you an email. If you want to participate in the live calls, you just literally tap a little thing and like magic, it puts you on the list. And the site, though, is always active. So now that all the labs are coming out, all the calls are out, everything stays active for all of you. And then when new members come in at the end of Feb, March, really, early March, just like you guys did at the beginning, everyone will just see lab one at the beginning. But all of you will see everything all at once. And that's how it goes. There is no charge for coming back in 2026. So you'll be able to come back and learn and ask questions of the mods. For those of you who have not officially done the 21-day nervous system tune-up, you have access to that at the end of this round. Just know that it's pretty much the same material, other than some of the emails are written differently, but the biology of stress videos in there are in there. The nine neurosensory exercises are in there. There's maybe one or two that are slightly different, but SBSM, just for historical purposes, was first created. And then we created 21 Day for those who were not around when we started live sessions. So that is why that was developed. But the structure and the sequencing of SBSM for me personally is how I wish people to go through in terms of the basics, the foundations, diaphragms, kidney, adrenals, joints, healthy aggression, shame, and then getting into more Feldenkrais pieces. So it grows. And that's where I'll start today is the sequencing of neuroplastic healing. I'm gonna turn a light on here. Okay. So let's get going. So handout at the very beginning. And just a note for those of you who haven't done 21 Day, I'm going to just nip this in the bud because now we'll get questions. At the end, there'll be a little click thingy where you will literally, it'll say, start your 21 Day tune up now. And you just press on that and it starts an email sequence and you get access to it. So that's how that works. There are moderators in there for questions. So Leah's in there, Carrie's in there, Mara and Jen. So they swap shifts and are in there throughout the week. Yeah, so that's the answer to that question. Okay, so reference materials. So the very top here, there is an ebook that I wrote ages ago called The Power of Neuroplastic Healing. And I call it the five stages everyone must understand. And it's really, in some ways, the bread and butter of growing capacity slowly, starting with the basics and growing and differentiating. I talked a lot last week in the training call around differentiation. If you can recall, when I was talking more about the Feldenkrais work and the Feldenkraisian learning. So that material in eBook form is on the extra resources page on the SPSM site if you want to do a little extra review. Other things to review, the pre-game videos that you would have been introduced to at the very beginning of SPSM. Those are simple videos. I would say they're there because I want to ensure you have a bit more of a broader sense of it is still important to eat well and to move and to rest. I have one in there about feeling resistance, scheduling or not scheduling, right? For some of us, we have things so organized in our day, and if that gets thrown off in one little bit, it sends us into a bit of a spiral. For some of us, we're so disorganized that nothing gets done, and we want to have a healthy balance. That's regulation, right? We want to be able to have order in our lives. We definitely need that, but then we have to be able to let go of control sometimes. Because it's not always going to follow. This is essential for parents of toddlers and infants and children. You gotta go by the beat of their drum until that point where you have to start enforcing rules and boundaries and all the things that we need to still learn to function in society, because we are not yet in that space where everyone is regulated, right? So we need to be able to pick and choose our battles, pick and choose when we need organization, when we can have a little bit more disorganization. And when we have greater regulation, we start to be able to sense, I can let that go. That's okay. Or the impulse, oh, I really need to organize this because it's just not good that this thing isn't organized. So again, in service of those pre-game videos, there's just light touches of things in there. The three-part healing trauma video training, this has been around for almost 10 years now. This is where I teach the swimming pool and beach ball analogy in depth, but we got that in lab, or not lab, training call number one. We went through that. That's also where I speak about my classic car scenario, where you have person A and person B. And person A, I depict as the person who had a little more regulation growing up. Person B, not so much. And then those two people get into identical car accidents. This is obviously a hypothetical situation. Person A walks away from this very minor car accident with no problem. Person B walks away and they're a mess. Their system gets more activated, more shut down. It doesn't make sense based on how minor that piece is, but it's a really great example to just showcase when we have existing dysregulation in our system, and then we have a life event that is either big, medium, or small, it can unload the balls in our pool, to go back to that analogy, right? Of the swimming pool beach ball analogy. One question that I sometimes get, and I'm just going to put it out here because I know there's a lot of ladies in the room who might be in that age bracket that is what we call perimenopause. I just keep getting this question, so I'm just going to say it. A lot of people ask me how this work connects with that. From my sense and feeling it myself, perimenopause can be that car accident. So when our hormones drop, and things change if we have a ton of balls in our pool and we're deficient in nutrients and minerals. This is for the guys too. If you've got partners, you got to understand this. It really can throw off the system. And I have found, folks have found, women have said that as they get more regulated, the symptoms, they lessen. Now, of course, you definitely have to take care of your body, right? You've got to make sure that it's metabolically healthy. You're moving. Your muscle mass is super important because our muscle mass declines around this time and we need to keep it, and it can be kept. So that's really all there is to say. I mean, I also think it's important if you need to work with a functional medicine doctor, a naturopath, I'm all for supplementation when needed for the hormones, preferably natural, but everyone's different. So you gotta look into that. But I have seen a trend when there is a lot of stored trauma and a lot of dysregulation, these symptoms can be much worse. And young too. We really, I shouldn't say this, should, but we really don't want to be plagued by this stuff in our late 30s, early 40s. It shouldn't happen until we're in our 50s, really. There's some cultures that have babies into their 60s, believe it or not, but they're also living on the land. They're nomads. They're not in toxic environments. They have a very different lifestyle. Right. So our view of hormones and fertility is very skewed, in my opinion, at least in the West. But men too, the testosterone drops also, and this is where we need to really ensure that we're healthy, not just in nervous system, but in metabolic health. So little note there to tie into that car accident scenario. So again, that's in the three-part healing trauma series. It's worth reviewing. I'm definitely a little younger, a little more dysregulated in those videos, but the essence and the education is still there. There's also handouts. There's two, three really good handouts and worksheets in that too. So be sure to check that out if you haven't. And then Seth, my husband, he has some healing music on the site. Have you guys found that? It's beautiful music. He composed that specifically for healing. So if you guys don't know, he is a composer by trade. He went to university to do that, and a percussionist as a expert. But he also understands the chakras, the tones, regulation, right? Sound baths have become quite popular where you go and you listen to singing bowls and drums. Those are beautiful, but for a lot of people, it's too intense. It just goes for an hour and it's a lot of frequency. It's a lot of vibration. It's a lot of neurostimulation. We'll get into that in a second here. And so just be wary when you go or careful to these sound things because it actually can open up stuff. And when you're in a group environment, I have found it can be very compelling to stay and override because you want to stay in the group. And you've paid for the class and you're there, you've driven to get somewhere, and you say to yourself, I should stay because I'm here. Oh, it's only 10 more minutes. But that extra 10 minutes is like that car accident, right? You might be fine and then that one high note or that one bass note can just be too much. So I'm not saying don't go to those things. Just like, if you want to go to a rock concert, go, right? But listen and sense your body and know when it's time to take a break, to go to the bathroom, have some fresh air, et cetera. It's the same with meditation. It's the same with conferences, retreats. These can be environments that can be very overstimulating and fun. So we push. And we push, and then we come out and we're exhausted. And so we don't want to muck that up when we've done all this great work to slowly build capacity. What I often say is, when you get a cut on your hand, a little cut from something, paper, I got a paper cut the other day, and there's that time where it's really vulnerable and you need to keep it clean. You might need a Band-Aid on it. Even you want to keep something on at night because you might move it over something and it opens it up. Depending on where you are in this healing journey with your nervous system, that rawness might be present and you want to not throw too much at it. But with time, as you tend to yourself, as you rest, as you grow more capacity, as you integrate more, and we know when you get a cut, what happens? It starts to close. And then it starts to scab. And once that scab is off, then it's pretty much sealed up. But there's still that moment where it's quite vulnerable and you could open up that wound, right? Same with stitches, right? If you've ever had stitches, there's that moment where you really got to be careful. And then there's that moment where, oh yeah, they're done because they start to pop off. So everyone is at a different level. Just be aware of where you're at. Obviously, for some of us, the Christmas holidays are coming up. For those that celebrate, this is a great time to practice your impulse and listen to what you want as adults, right? And listen to what you want for your children and the things that can occur in this time are tricky, and we can see someone unwind and reopen up wounds when they've just started to close some of their trauma wounds with something like the holidays and having to shop and buy gifts and cook a turkey dinner and all these things that maybe you don't want to do. So really listen to that in your body and try to decide what is going to be best for my 2026 and my healing. So that can be one to really look at and think and tune into. All right, let's get into the handout and have some tea. Oh, and by the way, if you love the holidays and you love all the things, then do it. Right? Everyone's different. The key is does it give you energy and are you still pretty okay at the end of it? You know, if you come out of it and you need to rest for a week and you're in debt, probably not the best thing, right? So just be really, really aware of the conditions that we were raised in and how we might repeat them over and over again. So neuroplastic healing. So there are five stages that are talked about in Norman Doidge's book that's referenced here at the bottom of the page. Last week, I briefly talked about all of them. Today, we're going to talk about each one more specifically. So, quickly, the first one there, A, neurostimulation. So, I just talked about that with the sound healing, right? Sound can be stimulating, can also be healing. Movement, stimulating. Good for us. But of course, with anything too much cannot be good, right? So, movement, touch, light, sound, visualization, neurostimulation. B, neuromodulation. Neuromodulation. So, this is Norman Doidge's way of saying regulation. So, gaining regulation. C, neurorelaxation. So, this is that rest, digest, that low tone dorsal of the parasympathetic. This is that part of the vagus nerve that repairs us when we rest, when we sleep, when we have a chill out day. Now, modulation in some ways precedes relaxation because if we do not have regulation and if we have extra activation in our system, we can try to rest till the cows come home. But in that rest, we will have this underlying activation that won't let us drop into that rest digest. This is like the plight of everyone who's trying all the sleep techniques. All the practices, all the, dim light at night, all the magnesium, all the salt baths, all the things, all the sleep tracking things, like all the things, right? If our system is still being driven by intense sympathetic activation and we're keeping it under wraps with a little bit of our freeze and shutdown, we will not rest properly at night. We will not repair. And this is the story behind the ACE study, the Adverse Childhood Experiences study, that study that showed when there's early childhood stress, it makes us more susceptible to chronic illness later in life. Those things go hand in hand because the assumption is if you've had chronic stress and adversity early in life, right? At least up until now, most kids are not getting the proper care and treatment and regulation to get out of that stress response. Does that make sense? And so they become adults, teenagers, and then they get sick. And then we think it's something else, but really it's rooted in what we might call pediatrics, just like people in when I was learning physiology in university. My favorite professor said, she was a gerontology professor, which is the study of old age, geriatrics. And she, I remember she said one day that osteoporosis, which is where our bones become brittle and can break easily, is actually a pediatric condition that manifests in older age. So how our nutrition is when we're young, how we've worked our bones when we were kids, the jumping, off of structures in the playgrounds and the things that, we want kids to do, that forms and challenges the body to grow and get stronger. And so again, we could say that the epidemic we're seeing of chronic illness currently is a result of these pediatric issues. Good news, of course, we know that we can heal that and we can shift that. So that's all in service of relaxation. We need to work on the activation that's underlying. Neurodifferentiation, I really hit that home last week, so I won't say too much, except that, of course, this is where we're refining skills. I gave you the example of the baby that has the little hand that doesn't have a lot of dexterity, right? And then as they learn, as they reach, as they hold things, as they become humans, because it's in our DNA to have that dexterous hand control, and spinal control and balance control, we differentiate. We differentiate. Okay, page two. Page two. All right, folks. So another reminder, keep the focus on the training call. I know the chat is alluring. And Leah is there if there is a pressing question regarding what I'm talking about. But if there is a question that is more general, be sure to pop that in the general question thread. Thank you. Okay, neurostimulation. This is, again, movement, sound, touch, visualization. The first word there is all labs, all the lessons bring in this stage, all the learning, all the visuals. One of the visuals that I think is most prominent, at least to me, in SBSM is working with the kidneys and the adrenals. So if you even take a note right now and a beat to feel that, I know some of you may not have gotten to that, and that's fine, but just by saying it, I will say, imagine these two little organs in your mid back, kind of lower back. And just imagine them being there and just kind of resting, floating a little bit. The kidneys do so much. The adrenals do so much. Those adrenal glands pump out our important stress chemicals to get us going, right? To keep us protected if we have danger. Kidneys produce urine. They help us with balancing our acid base in our body. They work to keep us hydrated, excrete toxins. So just tune into those. Super important organ. So all labs bring in this stage. That's the example of visualization. So, I'm going to read a really great paragraph. I love this paragraph, so I'm sharing it with you. This is from a book that was written a long time ago. I can't give you the year, by a Russian scientist who's long passed. His name was Nikolai Bernstein, and he wrote Dexterity and Its Development. So, Dexterity and Its Development. I was introduced to this book during my Feldenkrais training. And just to give you context, he was the scientist that had his lab shut down because he wanted to explore human potential in communist Russia. Whereas Ivan Pavlov, who was interested in conditioning responses, of course, the classic bell and the salivation with the dog. I assume we all know that, but if you don't know that classic experiment, the Pavlovian experiments, that really showed that you could condition and train an animal. In that case, it was dogs. There's more to his story, I know that. But humans also have this capacity to be trained and conditioned. But Bernstein was interested in the diversity of humans and them being able to learn and change and grow. So this paragraph I will read, have a listen. You can read along with me, or you can just bring it in. So he writes, the learned movement, and by the way, this is in relationship to the lessons in the labs that bring in movement and sensation, all of the neurosensory exercises, right? As you know, what you're learning from me, at least I hope, is very different than just these techniques of calming the system, of shaking the system, of having the eyes go back and forth to stimulate parts of the brain. There's maybe a time and a place for those things, but we're working on a real delicate and complex relearning of your motor sensory system with education and connection to the environment. And so this paragraph sums it up nicely. So I will read. He writes, the learned movement must be actually performed many times in order to actually experience all the sensations which form the basis for its sensory corrections. It must be performed many times to allow the brain sensory areas to become acquainted with the variety of deviations and modifications, and to combine a vocabulary for future deciphering, for all future deciphering. Certainly, the most sensible correction training would be organized in a way that combined a minimization of effort with a large variety of well-designed sensations and that created optimal conditions for meaningfully absorbing and memorizing these sensations. Ugh, it's a mouthful. This is exactly what you're doing when you repeat the neurosensory exercises. When I might say, think about rolling your pelvis, or imagine that movement first. Do you hold your breath? Does your throat close? And then we minimize the effort. Okay, try it again. We talk about maybe the potent posture lesson, right? Where in that moment can you just breathe easily? And you can play with it if you're sitting on a chair that allows it right now. If you go too far back, you can do it. The muscles will work and they won't let you fall. My muscles will not let me fall back and hit my head. But if I were to teach from this position, eventually you would hear my breath get labored and I can already feel it. So I come back to be more aligned with my pelvis. I'm minimizing my effort, but I'm only f knowing that because I'm sensoring. I'm being sensory aware of the fact that my belly is getting tight, my throat is getting tight, I can't take a full breath. So that's just one example of how we use something like potent posture as a lesson to train ourselves, this repetition many times, and then we correct ourselves. Oh yeah, if I go a little there, okay, here, oh there, ah, oh, that's too far back. Oh, I'm only on one foot. Isn't that interesting? What if I can feel both my feet or both my sit bones? If you just follow the instructions rote without sensing internally, it doesn't work. Get it? It has to be felt inside, that tightness of the belly. The fact, oh, when I'm far back, I don't feel comfortable looking in both directions. That's a risk, right? And so when I come back to being more center, for example, there's a bit more freedom to look, for example, left to right. So I could take this paragraph, and if we really wanted to be scholarly, I could say, get a notebook and redo all the lessons you've done, read this paragraph and apply it, and be like, okay, when I do Wow, when I do the kidney adrenal lesson, the moment Irene says that, I notice I clench my belly. That is not minimizing effort. That's making it harder. But then I go, oh, well, that makes sense because I grew up in a threat and I had to be on guard my whole life. And now she's asking me to consider these organs softening. Theoretically, as an adult, I don't want that to happen, but my little person is like, no way, Jose. I'm going to keep the adrenaline hard and protected. And this is where you have to have that internal dialogue and this knowing, staying in this fight flight, staying in this protection isn't going to serve me long term. And we know it's not. Okay. So, love that paragraph. I read it in 2005, so it's served us well. Next one, to stimulate means to activate. Meaning, that's the next word, activation. Activate, activation. If I use this example of going too far back on my chair, I'm obviously activating my muscles. As someone who is experienced at running off of mountains and skiing off of cliffs, this doesn't bother me. I don't have fear of that. Some of you who don't have maybe that training in the outdoor endeavors, like my crazy days, you'll go 1 inch back and you'll be like, oh, no. Right? Maybe it's because you fell when you were young. Maybe there's a head trauma. Maybe when you were playing as a kid, the moment you went on that uneven surface, you had a parent that screamed at you and said, "Don't do that, you'll get hurt." And so you have this attachment to, or this coupling of anything where I throw my balance off or I risk myself, I get scared because someone's telling me you're going to hurt yourself. I'm just, again, using examples here. But we want to be able to decouple activation from fear. This is one of the reasons why, for those of you maybe, you've maybe heard me say this before, some of us, if we've had a lot of fear growing up, that comes often with a heart rate that goes high. That comes with fight flight energy that's ready to run out of the house, but you can't. Like, I want to run away, but I can't, right? I want to punch my mom, but I can't. I want to kick my brother in his balls, but I can't, right? Like you have these impulses, but you can't. So then you go into the gym or you go to exercise and you raise your heart rate and you get these muscles going and it triggers a memory in your body that says, ooh, this is like that time you wanted to run away from your home, or this is that time that you wanted to strangle your parent, or whatever it might be. We need to separate these because what often occurs is we will not be active because the spike in our heart rate, which we need to be active, physiology demands our heart rate to go up if we start walking faster. We want to be active for health. And so a lot of folks, from what I've learned and seen, will deny themselves vigorous movement because it reminds them of threat. Right? It reminds them of the time they couldn't run, they wanted to, or maybe they did run, right? And they're still holding that fear of that chase or that bad experience or that car accident or whatever it might be. So we decouple by using our higher brain. Using the basics of, okay, I'm sitting here, I'm in my living room, ain't no tigers, there are no car accidents. Enter whatever it is that puts your system into that activation. You will know that more than me. And that's where you have to then go, okay, I'm just gonna feel this. I think I need to resource today. I think I need to grab that warm blanket and soothe because it's too much. Or, oh, I feel this. I actually think I could run on the spot right now and get this activation out. Or maybe you track it and there's deep tears and sadness. Maybe there's rage. I need to, I gotta get this out, but I don't know how to get this out. Oh, I'm gonna do that vuah thing that I learned, right? So this is again where, as much as I'd love to give you that cheat sheet that says when you feel this, do this, your impulse, this is where following impulse comes in. You gotta follow and track the organic aspect of my body wants to do this right now, right? And then you, again, granted it's safe to do so, you move into that next stage of processing, integrating what it is. Okay, let's move on. So, A, this is anything that provides a stimulus to the nervous system. That's the next word. Nervous system. So, yeah, we're activating our system. We're activating our cells. We need activation. We need movement. A biological system does not survive in stagnation. Even swamps have movement in them, right? There's stuff moving, things are growing, things are purifying. B, kind of already covered this, but I'll read it out because it's here. So, sound, movement, light, and visualizing are all various kinds of stimuli into the human system. Walking, movement, dancing, listening to music, humming, singing, being in the sunshine, having a warm bath, a cold shower. In our very perfect worlds here in our homes, most of us probably live in spaces that are heat controlled, have walls and insulation. We tend to keep our temperature very kind of similar. And this is where it is important to experience temperature changes. Go outside, be a bit chilly. Don't give yourself hypothermia, obviously. Get, sweaty. Feel what it's like to get hot. Again, when we were really sheltered when we were young, or if we had a lot of fear, we may not have pushed ourselves to experience the elements of the world, right? So, being able to really sense the wind, the sun, the rain. I know that it was a common thing growing up where people would be like, oh, don't go outside. It's cold. It's raining. It's the day to stay inside. It's raining. Obviously, within reason, but. It is important, and this is really for the parents here. Bring your kiddos outside when it's raining, Be in the elements, get them used to feeling different environments. The system will adapt. Now, don't obviously go in minus 20 degrees for hours at a time. Be smart. But it is important to stimulate the system and have it react and change based on the environment. You will find, and some of you who have been doing this work a little longer, you may have noticed that your ability to temperature regulate has improved. You're not as cold when you're outside. You sweat more when you exercise. That's another thing that will occur. That means your body is learning how to cool. You might even find that your odor changes more because your system is detoxing differently, right? The organs are working. The repair is working. All right, next line, C. So the main purpose of stimulating the system is to challenge it and wake up. That's the two words there. Wake up. Circuits in the system that have been asleep or have been simply taking a big long rest. So rest there is the final word. We could even say, systems that have been in shutdown, systems that have been not activated. I'm of the belief that all humans have the ability to learn in multiple ways. You know how people say, oh, I'm an auditory learner, I'm a visual learner, I'm more kinesthetic. Well, I can't prove this in working with as many people as I have and seeing that as we get more regulated, our capacity to learn in different ways increases. And I think it's just, again, back to that Pavlovian conditioning thing I mentioned. If we had parents that really advocated for academics or we had parents that really advocated for, say, sport, then we're going to get trained in that way. I think we have the ability to have lots of different ways that we learn. I do think people have proclivities. Some people are just naturally drawn. They love music and they want to do music. Some people want to do dance. Some people want to cook food. Some people want to be philosophers. Some people want to just work with their hands and be carpenters and plumbers, mechanics, right? So I think that we have proclivities based on all sorts of things we won't get into right now. But I also think when we get more regulated, our learning styles broaden. I personally know that. So just watch out for those little sparks of you doing something where you think, oh, I'm not really a learner like this, but I'm interested in this now. Listen to that. All right, page three. Page three. D, the very top. So in Smart Body, Smart Mind, pretty much every single lesson and practical neurosensory exercise you did was a form of neurostimulation. So everything you did, orienting, diaphragms, joints, kidney adrenals, following impulse, all of that was in service of stimulating the system. You moved, you touched, you learned by a constant synthesis of thinking, sensing, you visualized, you made sound, right? Yeah. I can't stress this enough. Just going through the motions for the sake of the motions, again, from my experience, will not integrate this material. There needs to be that higher brain witnessing it, right? Because of our humanness, we have this higher brain. So you could do the movement over and over again. You could just stand there. Imagine that, you guys. Like, this is kind of silly. But if you were to just stand up and just rock back and forth for the sake of rocking back and forth, but you're not paying attention to anything, yeah, you're moving, you're challenging your inner ear organs to not fall over, but you're not sensing the detail, right? You're not sensing how the breath might change. And we've seen this. I saw this when I worked in fitness, I saw this in the mind-body world. People will go to these classes and they're just tuned out. They're not actually, if you were to say to them, what did you just do in that exercise class? They couldn't tell you. I was that exercise teacher. I know that. I would do the same things every week with people and they still wouldn't remember how to do the thing, even though that they were there week upon week, year upon year. So they were never learning it. They were just there because they knew they had to be there and they paid for the class. So again, this ability to really learn what you're doing is super important. So next line down, A. So the Feldenkraisian way of learning, I think, is more potent. So that's the word potent. I believe than many other forms of neurostimulation because we're doing more than just following the leader, so to speak. That's the word or the three words there. I just said that, right? You're not just listening and rotely following, you're assessing your internal physiology. So, B, you're pausing between your thoughts, images, sensations, feelings, reflexes, reactions, all of it, of the imagined, that's the next word, imagined movement for my instruction and the actual movement. So, the imagined movement and the actual movement. You're orchestrating a lot. Those are the two words, a lot, nervous system wise, during the neurosensory exercises. I think this is one of the reasons why I have seen that the Feldenkrais method as a method has not gone to the level which I think it could. Because it is very difficult to do the high-level Feldenkrais system when we have underlying activation and dysregulation. See how that might make sense? When you've got fear and threat and constant hypervigilance or shutdown or freeze, nothing's coming in and registering. It's just a movement. And so, as someone who's been doing that work since 2001, and then formally since 2004, I've heard over and over again, oh, Feldenkrais didn't work for me, or I didn't like it, or I didn't see the point. And I don't think it's the system, it's the person isn't ready for that level of differentiation yet. And this is why more of the Feldenkrais lessons of more advanced nature are in later labs, in Lab 10, for example, right? So it's important to even go back to the basic ones, go back to potent posture, right? Go back to connecting the head and the pelvis, right? That basic lesson of connecting the head and the pelvis is why I can sit for so long here and write and teach and work, because my system is in a constant state of flow, even though I'm not doing these big, elaborate dance movements, right? So, just something to consider how you go back and see these lessons with more understanding that you know now, more regulation. More things will come through as you go back to those basic lessons. B, neuromodulation. So we're still on page three. So again, this is regulation, settling our nervous system, getting it out of fight, flight, freeze, shutdown. So this is a stage, this stage is all about helping that noisy brain, that chaotic brain, and the autonomic nervous system become more regulated. That's the word you want to write down, regulated and settled so it can have the chance to heal and grow. Heal is the word, heal and grow. As I noted before, if we're staying in high levels of activation, sympathetic fight, flight, and then a lot of the shutdown freeze energy, our system cannot recover, it can't recoup. And then B, final bullet point there, depending on the person and their history, how to bring the system down and settle it will vary. It will vary. And God, I wish it was simpler, but it's not, because we've all been raised differently. It's pretty par for the course when you take an animal that's had trauma and abuse. Not that I would say it's always simple. We'll go to page four now, but they need safety. They need consistency. They need food. They need movement. They need routine. That often does the trick and time. But for us, because of all the things that humans experience, right? Surgeries. Births that are traumatic, parents that aren't around or are around, being raised by different people, different accidents. You know, we don't just have one sport. We have all sorts of sports. Isn't that weird? Right? Animals in the wild, they just do their thing. They don't have different sports. So if you think about the myriad of sports that we might have done that made us get into accidents, the different school teachers. Yes, we all learned math and reading for the most part, but how we were taught is so different. It just, when you start to really look at it, that shows us how complex our healing has to be. So, in service of that last bullet on page three, how we get out of the activation, for some of us, you're just going to be working on this building of capacity for a long time. And then others, you might have a bigger boulder in your pool that needs to be worked on. And perhaps that requires some one-on-one work because the accident is, I'm just using one example. Maybe there was an accident when you were young that was just so intense and you can't handle that boulder on your own. You need to work with a therapist with that, for example, right? Or some of you will usually need both. Myself, I have to get so much body work still to this day because of all of my accidents and injuries. But some of you maybe didn't have those, and you might never need body work the way I've needed it. You know, maybe you were more like Seth And he talks about that, where he was screamed at and ridiculed and abused physically, emotionally, mentally. His learning and healing journey was very different than mine. I'm jealous of the fact that he doesn't have to have body work every week, right? Because his body's fine. He did not get pushed in sports. He didn't fall over off of things, but he had the other thing, right? And you can't say one is better than the other or worse than the other. It's just different. So this is where you guys have to do your soul searching and be like, oh yeah, I need to get some body work. I was a gymnast, or oh yeah, I was this, or oh yeah, maybe I need to learn how to do something because my learning experience as a child was so scary, right? Maybe I need to go and learn how to do pottery or something, just making that up, right? To experience adult learning in a different way. And you get to choose your teacher. You could go into a community class and be like, I love this teacher, or I don't like this teacher, I'm not coming back, right? Like, even that in itself could be very healing for some of us who had really bad educational experiences. Okay, that was all in service of everyone is different. You got to find your unique mode that you have to go into to keep going with this work. So, page four. So, again, we're still talking about neuromodulation. This is a long bunch of paragraphs, but all of it is familiar because it's stuff that we've done in the lab. So, number one here, for the purpose of the first three labs, they were dedicated to a orienting. That's the first word. Orienting. Orienting can be a powerful tool for settling the system. Notice I say can, because not everyone will. Find it settling, can be powerful for settling the system as it sparks up the parasympathetic nervous system and the social engagement nervous system. By looking around with awareness and feeling the head and the neck, those are the two words. And of course, there's a lot more in the head and neck. Got your brain, got your spinal cord, muscles. So your head and neck, they move. This is neurostimulation, and it's allowing the system to know where it is in space, essentially. You're seeing cognitively at least, but you're also hearing, you might be smelling, that danger isn't actually present. So, again, just to review, we're actively practicing orienting. And kind of using it as a stimulus to, like, oh yeah, look at that. Never realized there was a world out there. I know it's there. You know it's there, but in some for some of us, until we sit and we look, we don't realize, wow, I've never actually connected to the environment in a conscious way. So that is one of the purposes of orienting. We want that to eventually become natural. Out of curiosity, has anybody found that they're more naturally orienting now as they move through their space? Yeah. As they drive, hopefully, when you drive, you're walking across the street, right? Looking for danger. Maybe looking for, oh gosh, that gutter really needs to be repaired up there, right? There's a leak. Like, these things are exploratory, but they also help us see things that might need care, right? Oh, that tire doesn't look great. I just put my snow tires on and realized two of them had tread that was not there anymore. I'm like, uh-oh, I think my car's out of alignment. Right? I could sense something was wrong. And then I looked at the tires and I oriented and I verified. I'm like, oh yeah, something's not right with my car. Right. So these are the things that can really help us, save us, give us information about the environment. So orienting is a weird one because it's survival based. And if we're stuck in survival, orienting can be too hypervigilant or it can be shut down. Essentially, it won't be accurate. right? And orienting also connects to our neuroception. If we're not really actively able to see what's around us and then feel internally what we're noticing, we might not notice that that is a bad situation over there. Don't go there. Or, ooh, that person needs help. It looks okay to go. I'll go help them. Right? So you see, it's orienting as a lesson, but then we integrate it in with the complexity of the human system in relationship to the environment. We're rewiring maybe our orienting response that was too hypervigilant or too shut down when we were little. So again, it's not something that you just do once and say, oh, it didn't work. Doesn't work. You got to keep doing it, right? You're learning a new language. Okay, breathing. Next one, B for breathing. Breathing exercises. Cultivate the inhale and the exhale. These were two specific breath-based exercises in SBSM. They're placing a focus on the body, obviously, on the breath, obviously. So there's neurostimulation. So just this basic, that's the word, basic shift in attention can help settle the system and bring it to rest. They also serve to increase awareness, capacity, and to help bring the bracing, I'll explain this in a second, that's the word bracing, that occurs in the true diaphragm due to stored traumatic experience, toxic and chronic stress. So, I've done drop-in classes just on breath. I have videos on breath and breath work. I have students who are in my mentorship that have practiced breath work and do breath work. And what you'll notice about this work as you do more of this nervous system work is just doing breath work for the sake of doing breath work is not going to cut it anymore. And by that, I mean there is sort of this thought in the zeitgeist of the nervous system influencer world, if I call it that, that, oh, I did some breath work, so I did my nervous system regulation work today. That doesn't work. So breath work can be wonderful as a therapeutic, just like a nice hot bath can be therapeutic and feel calming, but it's not actually regulating your nervous system at that core autonomic level. It's a state shift. So when we've had a lot of trauma and something bad is always happening around us, one thing a person might do is they'll go like this. They'll hold their breath or they'll brace. They'll get tight in their belly. It doesn't allow the diaphragm to go down. The spine rigidifies. All of it's connected, right? When the spine is rigid, in front of that is the organs, in front of that is the diaphragm, the ribs, the fascia. And so the lessons in SBSM, the two, they're simple. It's not to go in to force the breath, it's to notice the movement of the air inside the cavity of your system. And to, if you can recall, again, for those who've done these lessons, you're making big up top and big down below. But it isn't about how much you breathe, it's forcing and moving the air into different parts of the chest cavity. Now, of course, that air is staying in your lungs. You can't move the air in your lungs into your belly, literally. But the movement of the diaphragm is allowing the belly to get big or the chest to get big, like that. But again, it isn't about how big and perfect you can do it. It's exploring, moving the space here in this core system of yours. What often happens, from what I've seen with breathwork lessons, is there's a very strong directive, which is okay. There's nothing wrong with doing something like one of the common ones would be breathe in for five, hold for five, and exhale for five. Another common one is breathe in for four, hold for seven, and out for eight. Now, these can be a resource to calm the system, to manage the system. But let's just say, so again, I'm going to say, do that if that feels good, if it's a resource. I'll share a quick story. When I had what I think was COVID a few years ago, I could tell it was hard to breathe. My lungs were really congested. And I remember sitting up in bed thinking, wow, someone didn't know how to expand their breath into their pelvis and into their shoulders and into their back and to not get scared. I could see this leading to a panic attack quite quickly because my airways were really closed. And so I worked with myself, knowing what I know. I had some fear, but I watched it and I'm like, I'm just gonna soften. I'm gonna soften my belly. I'm gonna imagine my kidneys dropping. I'm gonna bring the air into my shoulders, into my pelvis. And it allowed the airways to soften because the more stressed you get, the more those airways tighten, right? That's the sympathetic response. So breathing is so interesting because we just do it. We could all try to hold our breaths here. I can guarantee you won't be able to. You will breathe. The brain will not let you not breathe. And so, in those lessons, one of the lessons, if you can recall, is holding on the exhale and waiting. You guys remember that one? To the breath to come in spontaneously. And that's something to practice in a way that is more soft and not harsh. And yeah, James Nestor's book, Breathe, is actually very, very good. And it's quite funny too. He writes from a good humor point of view. I think he's a journalist, so that makes the book a bit funner. But it does explore a lot of the different breathing techniques. I do recommend it. So we work with this to gain awareness of the breath area, these different parameters, the diaphragm. But again, I'm going to put you into a situation where, let's say, you're hanging out one day and maybe you're doing one of the breath lessons. And all of a sudden, you start to feel a little something, something in your legs. Maybe you're feeling a little activation. That's the time to go, oh, I think I'm maybe finding old charge from something. Maybe you don't know what it is. But that's where you pause the breath work or the lesson, and then you track your legs. And you sense, what do my legs want to do? Oh, I think they want to like get up and they want to like run on the spot. Or maybe they want to stretch, right? Or maybe your arms want to stretch. So, this is again where you use these lessons to get into the body, perhaps, and you will, but then you want to track back to the title of this call, which is theory and practice equals application and integration. You then apply your knowledge and go, oh, or maybe you're breathing and all of a sudden you feel this sharp pain in the chest, and it's probably usually when that happens, it's fascia that's opening up. Has anybody ever had that where they are breathing and all of a sudden there's like this tight pain and you think it's like a knife stabbing into you and it isn't? That's often fascia that is opening up and softening. But again, because we aren't used to tracking these things, we think there's something wrong. And that's where you go to the basics. Sense your body on the ground, breathe in a way that feels comfortable, maybe look around and wait. And usually that fascia opens up. So there could be emotion that comes from this. Because again, remember, if your breath got held from a scary thing, and now you're opening up the ribs, the tissue, the fascia. You are now unlocking the emotion and the memory that has been trapped in your nervous system. And then that's where, oh, I want to cry right now, or I want to scream, or whatever it might be. All right, C. No, the fascia and the pleura are not the same thing, as far as I know. If you, again, the internet is so great right now because you can just look up anything. So use that. But if you look up the lung anatomy, those it's like it's called a pleural cavity. And so there's the cavity and then there's the fascia. To me, I think of fascia like the Saran wrap that's just around everything, right? And it is a very intelligent tissue. We're just starting to learn more about it. But typically, when there's that sharp pain, from my experience and in talking to osteopaths and people, it's the fascia. And then, of course, with that, you've got muscle, right? You've got ligaments and tendons, like tons of ligaments and tendons all through the ribs to the sternum. So there's a lot of stuff going on in that rib area, in that lung cavity area. All right, posture, C, potent posture. That's the next one. So while more stimulating due to the standing position, it's challenging the body's balance organs and is demanding a focused attention, that's the word, focused attention to the body position in standing, which in turn, due to this focused attention, can settle the nervous system. Now again, I have that word can because everyone's different, right? I already talked a little bit about potent posture, so I won't dive into that. If you haven't reviewed the potent posture lesson, it's a good one to review because it ch is challenging your balance organs. You're standing up, and it is, for those of us who stand during our day, which many of us might, it's good to know where we are on our feet. And it's something to constantly tune into when we're waiting in line for something, right? When we're brushing our teeth, when we're washing the dishes, it can tell us a lot. So review that one when you can. D, next line, diaphragms, joints, kidneys. Again, remember this is in service of neurostimulation, right? All the lessons that we're playing with here. So diaphragms, joints, kidney adrenals, the brain stem, the gut-brain connection, the mediastinum, which was the heart area, that's a lesson in the labs. There's the layers that we did, so much, right? So this is all bringing focused attention. That's the word. Focused attention to even more specific parts of the systems and body. And just as I mentioned with the breath, the diaphragms, the joints, the kidney adrenals, the brain stem, the gut brain, the mediastinum, the layers, all of them hold information. So maybe one person, when they work with the diaphragms, finds that that is a really, oh, wow, I can really get into some emotion when I work with those. But for someone else, it might be the brain stem. Maybe there was more early trauma, right? When we're much earlier, the brain stem is a much more primitive organ. And it is, I'm so bad sometimes with my animal biology, but like turtles, right? And you see a turtle and you touch it or pick it up, or snails, and it's like curiosity. You want to see their head like pull in. Like I sometimes when I see a little slug, I'm like, oh, hello, you. And then it like, right? So we have that. And so when we've had lots of scary stuff, lots of trauma when we're young, before we can make meaning of what's going on, this brain stem hasn't been in protection mode. Just like the gut, right? The gut is technically, we call it our first brain. Right. And that gut brain access is super important. So, for some of us, working with the brain stem might be really important. For others, it might be the kidney adrenals. They're all important. So, again, everyone's going to be a bit different. If you've had more injuries, working with the joints might be really important. But not, no one is better, bigger, more important than the other. We're sort of handing you the platter of all, not all, a lot of the body pieces that respond to trauma and stress. All right, final one, E. It's our final one. Yep. E, So there's more visualization of the system opening up. So plus, there's more visualization of the system opening up, more space increasing, and even, as in the case of the kidney adrenals, a decrease of the body's stress chemicals. So I always like to go back to our basics of the swimming pool, right? We're working with these diaphragms and joints and the breath and the layers. We're wanting to open up and bring flow into these systems. If I really simplify it, have trauma, body's gonna phew, like the turtle, phew, right? Or the system goes phew, and then it collapses, or it goes phew, and it stays hypervigilant, or we go between both. I'm really simplifying it. So we're working with all these spaces to give it more juiciness, give it more life, give it more blood flow, right? And this is also physiological in that when we don't have blood flowing through these things, they don't get nutrition, right? Again, this is basic physiology, but when there's healthy autonomic regulation and we move, and we do all the things we do, it brings more flow, more blood. But then when we bring more blood to something, it also allows the transference of waste products to leave. So there's this constant exchange. And that's also why breathing in all the ways is important, because it's bringing in oxygen and it's then bringing out our waste products, carbon dioxide. Yeah, the spine is made up of many joints. So again, grab an anatomy thingy on the webs on a site or grab a book, but you've got these vertebrae, and each vertebra is a bone, and any bone that connects to a bone is a joint. And then to make it even more complex, we've got ribs, and the ribs go to the sternum, and the ribs go to the spine. And so within each and every little tiny connection of those bones going in is forming a joint. And then usually within those joints, there are tendons and ligaments and cartilage. Every joint's a little different, but we want these to move, right? All right. Number five, page number five. All right, bottom line. So, bottom line sentence. So, by bringing the focus and attention to key stress organs, so the kidneys, the adrenals, the brainstem, the gut, and areas of the body that get tight and shut down, such as the joints, the diaphragm, the mediastinum heart space, as a result of excess and toxic stress, right? So, all these things are doing these survival functions because of stress or past trauma that's still in the body. But we're working with all this. So, we're facilitating a shift. It's all about this shift that we're facilitating. We're facilitating a shift from survival, that's the word, survival, sympathetic, fight, flight energy. And parasympathetic, freeze, collapse energy. So we're basically trying to shift out of survival and we're trying to move into social engagement. And then I have their mammalian parasympathetic energy. Human, we could say. But if we just really look at the nervous system physiology, mammals, all mammals have these systems. The human aspect allows us to be here and change it. Right? That's the important thing to remember. Because of our higher brain, we can change this, we can rewire this. Said another way, in order to become more evolved humans, which I think is our goal, I hope, when we're under duress or stress that isn't life-threatening, we want to lessen the time that we're in our high dorsal vagal shutdown freeze parasympathetic nervous system. and/or high fight flight sympathetic nervous system. So these are all the big jargony terms you learned weeks ago in the biology of stress videos, right? This high tone dorsal. We want to shift out of that. We want to shift out of the fight flight sympathetic. And we want to move to more, a lot more ventral vagal social engagement and low tone dorsal. That's the true rest digest of the parasympathetic. So, this is another reminder of why it is not enough to say to someone, you just have to stimulate that vagus nerve. The vagus nerve isn't just one bloody nerve, it's branches and different tones. So the next time someone says to you, oh, I'm doing vagus nerve exercises, quiz them. Say, is your teacher teaching you about the different tones? Is she teaching, he or she teaching you about the rest digest compared to the shutdown? This is why it can be very, very dangerous to just stimulate that vagus nerve with an electrical device, which I know has gotten really popular. So ventral vagal is the social engagement. It is not high tone. So I think of it this way, just a quick review, and you can review this in the other videos. High tone and low tone of the parasympathetic, I think of it like a car engine. So you've got this car engine, and then you've got the gears. When you're in third gear or fifth gear, it's still the same engine, but it's just a different gear, different speed, right? So high tone dorsal is the shutdown freeze. Low tone dorsal is the rest digest, right? So, for those that drive standard transmission, if you've ever been in a really big truck and you go into low, four low, I learned how to drive in a really big F-250 truck. The moment you go down to that low, it's like the system goes kunk, and it goes so slow. And if you try to go faster, it won't let you. You have to come out of that deep low, right? You would do this when you're hauling up a steep hill. Think of your nervous system like that. When it's in that high tone dorsal, it's in that really slow, sticky, you can't go faster. Whereas when I think of the low tone dorsal of the parasympathetic, that's the rest digest. Cars are very efficient when they're like just cruising, right? You don't need a lot of gas when you're at like fifth gear. It's going fast, but it's like it's pretty fun, right? You don't have to do much. So I like to think of that portion of the dorsal of the parasympathetic like a car engine. Whereas the ventral, which is also the vagus nerve and also the parasympathetic, is like the lights and the blinkers. It's what communicates to the people around you where you're going. Just like I'm talking to you with my face, obviously, and I'm moving it, that's ventral. And I see you all kind of getting this, I hope, and smiling, right? That feedback gives me information. Just like, have you ever been driving and someone doesn't have their lights on? And you're like, turn your lights on, right? You know instantly it's not right. And usually they don't know for whatever reason. So that's just a little kind of way of looking at the parasympathetic nervous system with the ventral parasympathetic and then the dorsal parasympathetic. That was a crash course in polyvagal theory right there. So we want to go, so back to the handout. We want to go from reptilian to mammalian to human. This is not literal. This is nervous system wise. Reptilian is primitive physiology. They don't have the social engagement mechanisms, they don't have the same mammalian. There's a reason why more people have dogs as pets and not crocodiles or iguanas or lizards. I know some people have snakes and that, so it's cool. If you like the reptiles as a pet, no problem. But most people have dogs and cats, gerbils, hamsters, bunnies, right? They're mammals. We're more likely when we see a deer in the field to go, oh, look at that deer. What happens when you see a snake in the wild? Not the same, right? Again, it doesn't mean that the animal is better or worse. They're just different. We relate more to the mammal. And then, of course, the human aspect is the part we're working on. Because of our higher brain, we get stuck in survival. We get stuck in these bad spaces. This is why bad things happen, right? Animals tend to not wage war. Jane Goodall did study that with chimps, but they're a higher level mammal. If you read her books, she did see wars happening when she was studying those animals, but they're a higher level mammal, right? So that's what we want. We want to be more human. Many people are living in survival mode, as you know, and we're living in kind of our reptile brain, right? And we want to get out of that. We want to get out of reaction mode. And when we live more in that reptilian primitive brain, it's harder to connect with people. Back to my example of you see the deer and the fuzzy bears in the field, you want to go up and say hi to them within reason, whereas you just don't want to talk to the crocodiles and the snakes in the same way, right? So humans have that. When they're stuck more in survival, it's harder to be friends with them, right? And again, back to that natured human, that good bedside manner that's like, oh, friendly. This person's friendly. I feel safe around them, right? And it's because they're living more in that social engagement and more in that low tone dorsal chill out. I'm that person's chill. I like that person, right? Or that person has energy, but it's not activated energy. It's healthy energy. Kids have this, right? Like healthy kiddos have that. All right. C. Neurorelaxation. Yeah, it's true. Someone said that's why kitten videos on the internet make sense. Animal inter definitely. I think there's some positivity to some social media when we're watching things that give us a nice little, aw, look at how cute that is, right? All right, neurorelaxation. You guys know this. I don't think I have to say much more. We need to rest, we need to repair. But of course, to get to that, we need to get out of this activation. We need to get out of that survival response. So I'll read out the final sentence here. So, depending on where we are at in our lives, our demands, our tasks, our jobs, we might not always get what we need. But when we can rest and sleep, we want it to, this is a funny word, but I'm choosing to use it. We want it to ooze like bubbling cheese on a sandwich, right? We want it to ooze. When we are able to rest, we really want to be able to dip into that rest with that low tone dorsal. Those are the next words. That low tone dorsal of the parasympathetic nervous system. Go to page 6 because it's a continuation of that. And then the final bullet point there is personal assessment is a must. Personal assessment is a must. And you must prioritize to suit your needs. I say that to someone here who is maybe a parent, right? The demands of a parent with an infant and a toddler and a child are so high. And again, they're high when you consider how complex what we're learning here is. Kids are a lot of work because the human system is the most complex system, as far as I know, on this planet. And it takes a lot of apprenticeship, a lot of learning, a lot of routine to get us out the door, so to speak, right? So this comes down to when you are with little ones, you're probably not going to get the same rest that you would have gotten when you were without children. And this is where you have to be very diligent at picking and choosing your battles, not overdoing it, right? That notion of doing everything for everyone is not possible when you're caring for a little one or multiple little ones. I had a question the other day from someone who is going to university or school. It's like a 3-year program. And they said, I don't know why. I just finished a semester and all I want to do now is sleep. And I said, that makes sense. You probably just had to override for 3 months of school, get up in the dark of the morning and never have a break, back-to-back classes. That system does not allow for a lot of rest, especially if you're also working a job and raising kids, right? It will make it such that you might have to override a little bit, but then you have to make sure that on your downtime, you are really having downtime. And this is where you have to maybe be a bit more selfish, right? And really not do all the things that maybe you used to do when you weren't in school. So I just share that because there will be instances in our lives where we might have to override a little bit to get the job done, to go to school, to travel. But then you need to book in. Ah, now I need to deactivate my system. Now I need to recoup and repair. We've been on this track as humans of just going, 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 and then everything just collapses, right? D, final one. Neurodifferentiation. So remember again, we're going through all these stages of neuroplastic healing and how SPSM's curriculum is teaching this to you. Again, Feldenkraisian learning is neurodifferentiation. So the moment you do any of the Feldenkraisian lessons, you are working with neurodifferentiation because you're moving. Whereas when you work with, say, the diaphragms or the kidney adrenals, we can just all do that right now without moving. Like we're moving because we're breathing. But I can ask you guys, just tune into your kidney adrenals or just have a little breath into your belly and imagine the pelvic diaphragm just softening, for example. That requires very little physical movement, whereas the Feldenkrais lessons by trade, you're actually moving body parts. So the moment you move a body part, there's something more to pay attention to. So there's more differentiated learning happening with that. B. So how can we make the learning, the neurostimulation, more complex? That's the word, more complex. More complex. And still keep up the neuromodulation. So, this is part of any learning. You start at lower levels and then you add complexity. You add complexity, just like learning a language, just like learning how to cook a certain type of food. You start with the basics. But as you add complexity, and that's what you will discover if you dip into Lab 10, right? And all the lessons there, more differentiation. Can you do more complexity and still stay present to the ground under you? Can you hear my instruction to blend in three different things and keep your mind soft and easy? Or do you hear that instruction and is there like a oh, there's no way I can do that, right? Like that is your system going into more survival. So even just listening to the instruction and noticing how your body reacts is an exercise in itself. Number C, final one. It all comes down to continually challenging and testing ourselves and breaking out of our comfort zones while staying present, so a few words here, and oriented to ourselves and our environment. Continually recalibrating and lowering our stress chemistry. And remembering to go back to the basics frequently. So This ability to break out of our comfort zone, that is so important. And to do that in a way that is humane and civil to ourselves, right? For a lot of us, we were forced out of our comfort zones with stress and duress, but we have to push ourselves. If we don't push ourselves a little bit, we will not shift and change. So we also have to dance with that potential uncomfortableness of just going a little past what is normal for us. If we don't do that, our system won't grow, but we also don't want to go so past that then we have to recover for 2 months. So this is that dance that you will have to play with as you work with this and integrate and apply the lessons. And then remembering to go back to the basics. So, orienting, following impulse, sensing the ground, sensing the breath, not changing it. Everyone will have different basics. For some, it might be resourcing, it might be containment, could be listening to the education, reminding yourself, oh, right, I know this. Just caught a question there. Leah, you probably answered it. But yeah, freeze is mixed. It's a mixed state. It's high tone dorsal and it's sympathetic. Because freeze is like that. So you've got some of that high tone dorsal, but you also got a little bit of the fight flight in there. So it's a freeze is a mixed state. But then the system rarely can just stay in freeze, and then it usually goes into collapse or shutdown. Or my favorite was staying in functional freeze. So I was very functional, very social, but I was still frozen. So yeah, the nervous system states are interesting because they move depending on the situation and circumstance, right? All right, friends. Packed call as always. Hopefully the madness of all these lessons and the education and the different ways of looking at them is starting to make more sense. In the again, this is not just a technique that you do, and then a technique that you do, and then a technique that you do. I had an analogy a few days ago, and I just recorded it for another video that we'll put out at the end of the year. So I'll share it with you now, because I really want to make sure this lands. The lessons, you learn them first as an exercise. Yes, you got to learn them at the beginning. But then you want to integrate them, which is exactly what this is all about, this call, integration, applying. But you couldn't take a baby and teach them speaking by just repeating to them over and over, A, B, C. A, B, C. A, B, C. I mean, it seems so silly, right? You all know, even if you don't have children, you can't teach a human how to speak the mother tongue by just saying A, B, C. Just like you can't teach high-level mathematics by just saying to someone, one, two, three. Yeah? But we need to start with the A, B, C's, but then we need to string them together into words and then into sentences. And so, part of what we're doing here, not part, a big what we're doing here, you're learning the lessons. Let's call those the ABCs. But then you're learning the education that strings them together. But then you have to apply it into real life. And then that's where it gels, right? So, think of this as it's not just when you're doing the lesson. Eventually, it's when you're driving, when you're laying in bed in the morning, when you're in the shower, when you're talking to someone. Are you holding your breath? Are you feeling your posture? Right. So I share that because I've seen an interesting trend only in the last few years where more people are learning about somatic exercises and these techniques, but they're just doing the A, B, C. They haven't spent the time you guys have to sit and listen to us over and over and over again for hours with these educational pieces. It has to get put together. And so when someone says, oh, yeah, I tried that whole somatic thing, healing thing, it didn't do anything for me. ask them, did you learn about all these different ways of integrating in the branches? Orienting is not going to cut it just to orient. You got to understand the reasons why we orient, or the orienting response gets stuck, as an example, right? So I wanted to share that with you because 10 years ago, it was a lot easier actually to teach this because we were one of the only folks that were teaching this in this way. Or, of course, if you were to work with a private practitioner. But now there's so much stuff out there that's teaching these specifics. But from what I'm seeing, it's just teaching technique. You got to bring that technique together, right? So thank you, everyone, for your dedication to doing something a little harder, a little more intensive. It will, I think, metaphorically offer you dividends in the end. It'll divide and divide and multiply into life and learning and healing and creativity and all the things. Thank you to my moderators. Leah was here today. Thanks to Susan, who's been hanging out and listening to these calls over and over again. Thanks, Susan. Thanks for everybody supporting these calls. And thanks to all the people who listened to the recording after the fact. Good job coming in and listening afterwards. Thanks to all the alumni. And Seth will see you guys for another call on Thursday, and we'll do wrap up next Tuesday. All right, everybody, have a good rest of your day. Bye.